Thank you. Good morning. Welcome, honorable members. I think we should start. One of the members who are not here, I hope they will find us as we proceed. And welcome to the DG and his team from the department and our guests. Thank you very much. I think we should start. The two items on our agenda are what's called delivery of bulk infrastructure and basic services, an update on those kind of things. And then we will look at the bill that we have been working with all along. So we first get this update. The part of the idea was that the House Chairperson of Committees has drawn our attention to the continued responsibility as committees whose work impacts on the Millennium Development Goals to continually interact with departments around these and report them, so that those of our colleagues who attend international meetings where these matters arise and are reported on, they are able to do so with at least Parliament having considered some of those issues. So this is why this area is important, amongst other reasons, including the fact that this is what we should be doing anyway. So I just thought that I should raise that. In fact, chairpersons of committees have been asked to, who are relevant to these MDGs, to meet continually to assess our performance in year towards 2014, at least, so that we are able to provide a proper report to the UN system that oversees governments in the implementation of this. So we'll give over to the DG and then we'll proceed. Yes, Ndati.
Mr. Chair, just before we start, I see in the press this morning that our minister has stepped down. Would it be possible for us to get an update, a briefing on what's going on?
No, the deputy minister will be here, don't worry, he will tell us, but we'll ask him to explain that, but I don't think that's what I understand to be the issue. Yeah, I just know that the minister has not been well, so that's what we understand.
But we will be brief.
Sorry? I will ask him when he comes, yeah.
That'd be appreciated.
Okay, yeah.
No, thank you, Chair, and honourable members. Maybe let me start, dear Chair, and I'm starting here because there are certain things that we can say. We did issue a formal press statement yesterday, so there's nothing to hide. So I'll repeat what the press statement says that we issued to the media yesterday. We issued a press statement indicating that our minister is on leave, on sick leave, and the president has appointed a acting minister, Minister Mthethwa. It is indefinite at this stage, and in the press statement we're really requesting everyone just to respect the period and the ill health that our minister is battling with, and that is all we're saying in the press statement, honourable Chair and members. So I mean, obviously the deputy minister, if he chooses to say anything else, he can say that, but we have issued that in a formal press statement. And the acting minister was appointed on the 24th of February. So for the record, the acting minister has been assumed duty at that date. Chairperson, coming to the business of today, thank you. We have a number of staff members again from the department. I'm not going to introduce everyone, maybe because they're even different aspects. But for the purposes of this presentation, I'm not sure the committee, we have appointed one or two new deputy directors general, late last year, And one of the new DDGs we've appointed is Mr. Ricardo Hansby, sitting to the right of me. He is responsible for what we call infrastructure and economic development. And I'm going to be asking him to make the presentation, and there are a couple of other officials also that are accompanying us here. The approach that we've adopted in general is the approach that we always try and adopt when we make these kinds of presentations. We try and give a backdrop with regard to an overview of where we think we are, in other words, the status quo, the problem statement, the challenges, and so on. We try and reflect in this presentation also some of the key areas of progress, some of the key interventions that we're making going forward. And then we can, at the end of the presentation, talking about important priority areas. We call it recommendations, but we're not really coming to the committee to make recommendations. It's more about sharing the priority areas that we are currently focusing on. And obviously, towards the end, we really are welcoming any additional advice, comments, and suggestions from the committee in terms of how we need to focus on this area. The final point to make on this is that in the ministers, in our outcome 9, and outcome 9 is one of 12 outcomes that this government is pursuing. Outcome 9 deals with local government. In that outcome 9, there are at least 2 specific, what you call, outputs within the outcome. There are 7 outputs in this outcome 9. At least 2 of those outputs speak directly to matters linked to matters of infrastructure service delivery. And we are also covering those matters in our presentation. So in a sense, what I'm really trying to say, Chairperson, we are also indirectly sharing progress with regard to Outcome 9 and certain aspects of Outcome 9 as it pertains to infrastructure. So Chairperson, those are just my few introductory remarks, but with your permission, can I hand over to Mr. Hansby to proceed? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members, Director General, and colleagues. The presentation that we've prepared, I think, you know, it is only proper that I introduce the colleague next to me, Ms. Anthuri Naidu, who has just been appointed as the Chief Director for Infrastructure. So she's directly responsible for bulk services and the delivery of basic services throughout the country. And she'll play a key role in terms of pursuing that agenda, but also interacting with stakeholders. The presentation itself, just on a lighter note, Chairperson, when people talk about bulk, some people think you can get things cheaper when you buy in bulk. You know, but on a more serious note, the presentation itself focuses on a number of critical areas. So in terms of, you know, the presentation itself, we will be covering the background, the progress, as the DJ has mentioned, that we've attained with the delivery of basic services and bulk infrastructure, the challenges that we experience in that particular field, but also the strategic priorities and the way forward. We derive our mandate, Chairperson, as the DG indicated, from the delivery agreement, specifically Outcome 9. But we also see this within the context of the President's State of the Nation address, in which he placed great emphasis on 2011 as being the year of job creation. In fact, that will proceed right up to 2020 with the idea of creating 5 million jobs in the economy. The second important highlight for us is that, you know, basic services, which the President also mentioned in the State of the Nation address, and accelerated service delivery through the development of municipal structure, is a key initiative and responsibility of our department. So that is the context within which we operate. That is the context in which we intend ensuring that bulk infrastructure does get rolled out throughout the country. Chairperson, I think it's important to note that what we are trying to do does not take place in a vacuum. And essentially, what we're trying to achieve with regards to the problem statement is that metropolitan municipalities and municipalities with secondary cities are facing challenges that relate to informal settlements. I think as a starting point, that is very important so that we know exactly what the purpose is of delivering bulk infrastructure. And that speaks to Outcome 8, which is the outcome on human settlements. We've also noted as a concern that dilapidated infrastructure, bulk infrastructure in rural areas needs to be refurbished and upgraded. We need also need additional investments, which again speaks to support to outcome 7, which is the outcome on rural development. So in terms of what we do, we have to articulate our activities in the delivery of bulk infrastructure with a number of other outcomes, so we don't operate in a vacuum. Just in terms of coverage, as you can see from the illustration, you know that there are still critical challenges with respect to the delivery of bulk infrastructure. This particular slide was compiled out of the Universal Household Access to Basic Services report, which the department commissioned. This report was released in 2007. And essentially, as you can see in the west of the country, you know, development has progressed significantly. But we still have challenges in other parts of the country. You can see right at the top in the north, where we still struggle with 30% access to basic services. That is just a provincial breakdown of the nature of the challenge that we are faced with in terms of the rollout of bulk infrastructure. Now, if you look at the penetration rate in the Western Cape, for example, we're talking about 88%, but then we have a universal higher access rate of 83%. That is essentially for your more formalized areas. So the survey took into account a number of variables in defining specifically what the access challenges are. And again, you can see in Limpopo, as indicated in the previous slide, the challenges remain highest. Chairperson, it's important also for the committee to be aware that the department operates according to some key principles when it comes to the rollout of bulk infrastructure. We, as a department, we have a cross-cutting coordinating mandate. We do not operate on our own. We have to link, or build linkages with other departments, with other stakeholders, with other role players. And that is essentially the role of the department, which brings us to the second point. We respect as a department the mandate of line functions of sector departments, but I think there's a broader recognition within government that we need to ensure integration of all our functions in order to ensure better and more comprehensive service delivery. Chairperson, we also recognize the role of other spheres of government in the provision of bulk infrastructure in the country. Again, we do not do this on our own. And this is derived from the constitutional mandate given to other spheres of government in terms of bulk infrastructure and a number of other areas which the department collaborates on with other spheres of government. But I don't think it's a question merely of autonomy. I think it's a question of us ensuring that we coordinate all our activities and establish the necessary linkages. Chairperson, we have a developmental approach. What we are saying through that is that we intend as a department going beyond mere facilitation. It's not good enough to say that we only facilitate. We cannot work on the assumption that, for example, if we give funding to provinces and municipalities, that things will happen by themselves. We actually need to go with that funding and build up capacity at local level. We need to provide the support and we need to leave a legacy. It is only then that delivery can effectively take place. We all know that there are major challenges when it comes to the delivery of bulk infrastructure at local level. So we want to ensure that when we support local government, we go beyond merely putting people together. We must actually ensure that there are programs and projects in place to support those initiatives. Chairperson, I think lastly, with regards to the key principles, we are saying that we need to integrate service delivery and move beyond the narrow approach of isolated projects so that the projects that we pursue at local level in the development of bulk infrastructure have a wider impact. These projects don't only play a role in delivery to households, they also play a role when it comes to developing the economy and unlocking opportunities for employment creation. So everything that we do needs to be articulated with that particular objective of ensuring that the economy grows, but also that we attain the target of 5 million jobs by 2020. Chairperson, we have targets which we are held accountable against. And this is confirmed in outcome 9, the delivery agreement of our minister with the president. In terms of water, we are saying that we need to move from 92% coverage to 100% in 2014. The chairperson opened the meeting by mentioning the Millennium Development Goals. So again, you know, we take that into account when it comes to setting our targets. For sanitation, from 69% to 100% in 2014. For refuse removal, from 64% to 75%. And for electrification, from 81% to 92%. Now, in South Africa, we have enormous challenges with ensuring that our statistical base is objective. So what we are saying as a department is that we've set these targets, you know, and these are only targets. If we can achieve above them, you know, we will still do so, because we have a mandate to deliver as much as we can and to use our resources effectively to ensure that we meet and exceed, you know, in some cases, the targets. Chairperson, what underpins what we do are key programs. We cannot only have policies, we cannot only have targets. We need to develop the instruments, and we need to implement the instruments to ensure effective service delivery, and in particular the delivery of bulk infrastructure. The most important one which drives our department is the local government turnaround strategy and the municipal turnaround strategies. Within that particular context, it has been advocated that municipalities accelerate the delivery of bulk infrastructure. So bulk infrastructure delivery is a key component of LDTAS, as we call it, and the municipal turnaround strategies. What we are also doing now is we are trying to mainstream the municipal turnaround strategies into the IDPs of municipalities, so that these don't take place in isolation. We cannot separate what is in an IDP from what needs to take place with the municipal turnaround strategies. We need to integrate them to ensure accelerated service delivery. We have the municipal infrastructure grant. I think everybody is aware of that. It is a significant instrument to ensure that there is delivery to communities and that municipalities can access funding to ensure that delivery takes place at grassroots level, and we can return to that later. We have a number of other basic services programs, but these are also augmented by what provinces and municipalities themselves already do. We as national government, we have our specific programs, but I think there is a host of other support initiatives at local level. We have the Bulk Infrastructure Fund, which we are working on. We are trying to finalize this particular initiative and to source the required funding. Essentially, you may think that it could lead to duplication. The department is very aware of that. So what we are trying to do is we are trying to refine the mandate of the Bulk Infrastructure Fund that we're trying to set up to ensure that it augments the Municipal Infrastructure Grant. Because the Municipal Infrastructure Grant doesn't reach everything in terms of infrastructure development at the local level. We also have, after we've identified the significant capacity challenges at local level, we are in the process of finalizing the establishment of a special purpose vehicle for infrastructure delivery. And I'll give more detail on progress with regard to that in a later slide. We have launched as a small but I think significant initiative, an engineering bursary scheme. This year, we will provide bursaries to about 70 students. That will increase from next year and the year thereafter. That is to ensure that engineering students at university level or at tertiary level, and these include, you know, people within the engineering value chain, you can say, that they get opportunities to assist, especially our rural municipalities. And the special purpose vehicle will make use of them extensively. There are other initiatives by government. I've heard the other day that the Minister of Public Works also launched a bursary scheme. And it is the responsibility of our department to also engage with them so that we ensure that there's articulation with what they do. Chairperson, access to basic services progress as at 31 December 2010. Now, with regards to water, at the moment, the figure is, with regards to penetration, 93%. with regard to sanitation, 70%, electricity, 82%, and refuse removal, 69%. Just in terms of explaining how the issues that we deal with in terms of ensuring progress with these particular targets, when it comes to basic refuse removal, 62% of indigent households are benefiting of total identified by municipalities. As you can see, the department is, you know, not the sole department responsible for this, so we rely on other departments to assist, in fact, to drive the implementation of some of these targets. You know, the way some of the provisions in the delivery agreement have been written may give the impression that we are solely responsible for meeting those targets. The fact is, when it comes to many of these things, it's either the line function department or the sector department is directly responsible, but we play a coordinating role, or the provinces and municipalities are responsible themselves. We are, in terms of, you know, ensuring that this takes place, setting up a national coordinating structure or task team, and the first meeting for that has already been held. Improved access to basic electricity, the target for 2011 is to electrify 150,000 households. 122,000 house connections have already been done by November 2010. So you can see there has been significant progress. If you look at the target of 150,000, there has been significant progress over the last financial year already. Progress with regards to the establishment of the special purpose vehicle. I think the key objective, it's important to mention, of the SPV is to ensure better coordination of the provision of technical support to municipalities, to strengthen their capacity to provide infrastructure services faster and better for the achievement of government targets and the MDGs. Now, that is a mouthful. Essentially, the special purpose vehicle will focus on critical geographic areas and municipalities within the country where we need urgent intervention. So, the part of the process of establishing the SPV has been an exercise to identify where this intervention should take place. We are talking of, in the first year, assisting about 30 municipalities, especially rural municipalities, by making funding and expertise available to ensure that there is delivery on the MIG and a number of other infrastructure initiatives at local level. The department has obtained sufficient support from key stakeholders already with regards to establishing the SPV, and there is an agreement that the SPV will be established as a government component within the ministry. A government component essentially is a standalone entity that reports politically at ministerial level. It is meant to fast-track service delivery, and, you know, that process has already been done. The process of the government component entails the submission of a comprehensive feasibility study for approval by the Department of Public Service and Administration, because you also can't have an empty special purpose vehicle. It needs warm bodies to go in there. It needs the right expertise. It's required the right quantum of funding to ensure that it is effective. Otherwise, we'll just be setting up another structure within government, and there is already a lot of duplication. So we're trying to avoid that. We're trying to ensure that the structure indeed serves the purpose that it is supposed to. Approval from Cabinet, it is expected that the government component should be operational from the 1st of April, which is not far from now. So we are living in exciting times within the department with regards to setting up the SPV, and we are looking forward to getting the capacity in to ensure its effectiveness. Just to indicate what we are trying to do in terms of dealing with populating the SPV properly. We have entered into discussions with the Development Bank of Southern Africa with regards to transferring the Sienja Manji project into the SPV. Now, Sienja Manji has two components. The one component is infrastructure development, and the other component is financial management for municipalities. So we've separated out the two functions. The financial management aspect will go to National Treasury, and the special purpose vehicle will end up with the infrastructure development component. That process is well underway and is almost complete, and it will coincide with our deadline of the 1st of April 2011. We face certain challenges, Chairperson. I think, you know, the most important remains funding. There is a bigger context to the funding challenge. Our infrastructure requirements, infrastructure development requirements, our maintenance requirements for the for municipal bulk infrastructure, we estimate stand at about 400 billion. Now that is a massive amount. And given the quantum of funding that we currently receive, and we suspect that we will need a great deal more in the long run to ensure that we address municipal infrastructure. Over 800 billion is going to infrastructure. We only get about, I think, 40 billion, if I'm not mistaken, did you? Over the MTS period. Now, the critical need remains at local level. You know, yes, we understand the need to develop roads, national roads, provincial roads. We understand the need to develop rail and all of those things. But I think there is a bigger need which relates directly to people and the quality of life at community level. And the only way to address this is through basic services, through infrastructure development. So, we, you know, in the long run, we will be putting initiatives together to ensure that we get a bigger slice of the cake. The bulk infrastructure fund is one of those initiatives. I think, without going into much detail, I think, Chairperson, it's important also to note that we need to develop the capacity. Money is not the only solution to the challenge that we are facing. I think there is a big capacity challenge within the sector. It does not only relate to engineering expertise, but it also relates to the ability of municipalities to spend their funds and their big allocations in particular. We have seen alarming media reports about underspending on the municipal infrastructure grant. And we are applying our minds as to solutions, and I'll speak about that a bit later. Chairperson, some of the other challenges that we are faced with is a proliferation of new coordinating structures with confusing mandates. Everybody is trying to coordinate nowadays in government without focusing on the core mandate of actual delivery. So you end up coordinating more than you are delivering. So I think, you know, part of the process that we are trying to do is we need to avoid that. Within this role of our department of ensuring that we build linkages and ensure coordination and integration, we must ensure that we, again, as a principle, respect the autonomy of other departments to integrate their core mandates. Water is not our core mandate. It is the core mandate of the Department of Water Affairs and municipalities, but we cannot shy away from our responsibility to unlock the blockages that there are with regards to ensuring that there is provision for water services at local level. There are no real practical engagement with infrastructure stakeholders to develop solutions. The DG has given the department a mandate to start building those partnerships with immediacy. So we are currently on a drive to ensure that we build those linkages with partners outside of the sphere of government. There is a lack of a national plan, integrated infrastructure planning, and more over delivery at local level. I think we need to develop a better sense. You know, infrastructure plans have been developed for roads and many other types of infrastructure. But I think we need a dynamic overall plan for the country with regards to bulk infrastructure, although it is located at local level. I think we can still identify the hotspots and crowd in support into specific areas. It doesn't help we only send in the MIG in particular areas, and the impact is not that high. If we put the MIG there, we must also come with other solutions, and we must package these to ensure that delivery does take place at local level. The cost of infrastructure projects have become prohibitively expensive in many cases. We know about the anti-competitive behavior within the construction sector. It is something that we are very aware of as a department, and we are encouraging municipalities to be on the lookout for that. The payment of contractors to develop local businesses and local contractors, that is an important challenge that we are faced with. Vested interest, we all know what happens at local level when many of the initiatives become entwined in political activities. We want to separate that out. We are busy legislatively with initiatives with regards to that, professionalizing the public service and all of those things. And I think it's important that we place that in the context of infrastructure development, because ultimately it affects service delivery. The recommendations, Chairperson, as the DG indicated, these are all things under consideration within the department. I think it's important to determine bulk infrastructure investment requires, and that speaks to the national plan that we need to have. We need to get a better understanding of what we actually require as a country in terms of spending on bulk infrastructure. We need to evaluate the current support mechanisms with regards to capacity building at local level, so that when we put the funding there, it is not the funding on its own, but it is actually support as well. In terms of the strategic way forward, we are saying we cannot treat all municipalities with this, or brush them with the same canvas. It is important that we make distinctions, because as a department we've adopted a differentiated approach to supporting local authorities, because we understand they have different needs. Enhanced coordination needs to take place within the sector, Chairperson. Funding, again, you know, we need to ensure that we optimize our spending at local level so that it has the desired and optimal impact. However, we need to indicate that we need to be aware of certain distinctions when it comes to water, sanitation, electricity, etc. All those sectors are different and have their distinct requirements. The way forward, briefly, Chairperson, we need and require a national integrated municipal services bulk infrastructure plan for this country. I've indicated that. We need clear programs and projects to use bulk infrastructure development for employment creation at local level. It doesn't help members if we just, you know, use the funding to ensure there is bulk infrastructure, but we don't use it as a tool for ensuring that we meet other government objectives. We need to simplify the institutional architecture supportive of bulk infrastructure development. At the moment, we have a cumbersome system, you know, with national various committees, you know, and then you have provincial various committees, then you have local various committees. We need to simplify and collapse some of these structures into one another so that we don't duplicate and that we don't waste. I think we can afford that. But also, if we start doing that, we can start building critical mass with regards to building our technical resources and spend our funding more wisely. Chairperson, I think the last few points is to, you know, I've indicated we need to reduce or collapse structures, but also programs. We need to build those linkages with bulk infrastructure stakeholders, as the DG has mandated us to do. Bulk infrastructure funding should be tied to planning and implementation support as well as capacity building. Again, Chairperson, we must ensure that when municipalities require funding, we don't only send the funding in. I think that is irresponsible, because it's either not spent or it's not spent properly in many cases. What we need to do is, when a request for funding comes in, we send with the funding the required expertise down to grassroots level from national to assist municipalities. But I think, secondly, that we leave a legacy in terms of capacity building. I think, finally, Chair, the special purpose vehicle is an important initiative of the department, and this vehicle needs to be strengthened. It is in its infant, or it will be in its infancy very soon, but I think in order to make it effective, it requires all the support it can get. Chairperson, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Members, there is the update on infrastructure. Any questions, any comments? One of your observations in the presentation is the what you call a proliferation of coordinating structures. But you also speak about not having put together relevant stakeholders who work in the same area. So that's an interesting observation. And the reason it struck me is that infrastructure is a very plays an important role in the realization of the vision we have of municipalities, the spatial problems that we inherited, and that if we do not collaborate with initiatives that already exist to undo that spatial apartheid spatial divisions that we had of the past, then we may just be reinforcing it. It may be of good quality, but it may not be achieving the integration that we thought we were working towards. So one of my questions is how you're doing that. I'm asking that to suggest, for example, also that the HSRC and the CSIR have developed an interesting system that is assisting some municipalities. I want to know whether the department is working with them using that system, that is a planning system actually, but in an integrated way. It would include, amongst others, infrastructure as well. So stakeholders including that. You've partly answered the issue about the quality of infrastructure. One of the problems in the oversight work that we did with infrastructure that's been laid is the poor management of contracts. It's very clear that if that was in place, it would make a huge difference to whether people get paid or don't get paid at all if they delivered nonsensical stuff. That's not what was meant to be there, so that the huge municipal infrastructure grant, which is part of the 850 billion that the government is laying out, actually becomes a legacy for real, that you don't have poor quality infrastructure laid out, and then next thing you have to spend additional money to do the work that was meant to have been done in the first instance. And so that issue of the quality of infrastructure, the management of those contracts, the evaluation of the quality of work done is a key to that process. You've made some reference to us to that. Who is supporting this special vehicle? I know that this is what you signed with the president. When you say you've consulted and supported, who is that? Spell it out, please, if you can. But it's also interesting that this decision about the Senza Manje thing, is that an agreement or is that a proposal, something that is yet to happen, incorporating it to be run under this process? That looks like an interesting development that... Yeah. Now, on page 7, the last bullet there speaks about the budget for financial management component being transferred to Treasury and so on. In the budget review, the Treasury refers to work that it is doing with the World Bank on capacity and so on. What is your involvement with that? And what is the nature of the work that the World Bank is doing? If you can brief us on that. Thanks. Yes. Bota, James, Marty, Matt, and the young man, Honorable Mandela. and Gandhiya, okay. All right. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. In that order, yeah. And my apologies for being late.
You must pay, and then negotiate later.
So I'm so frustrated with the today. Thanks, Chair. I just want to take you back on on page 2, where second bullet, where you said dilapidated bulk infrastructure in rural areas needs refurbishment or upgrading. I just want to check in connection with this statement, is there any audit maybe that the department has done to check which one needs upgrade, which one needs to be demolished at all, because it will take more than building a new structure than doing some refurbishment on that one. And also on page 10, on your way forward, you said there must be clear programs. I just want to check, since we are now approaching the financial year, starting off the next financial year, these programs are now in place, no, maybe you're still, they must be in place. And also I just want to join the chair that to check who will monitor those things. Is there any maybe a department that will monitor those things, maybe down to municipalities? As the chairperson has mentioned, there are some work that used to be done who nobody seems to be monitoring that work of a good quality. But I just want to check on the programs that you mentioned as a way forward. Are there any programs in place? Who will monitor them? And the capacity building, is there any program in place of the MIG funding that when doing our oversight work in most municipalities, we found that the problem is most municipalities, because they said they even didn't utilize their budget and other spending on that time. The capacity on using it, most municipalities doesn't have a capacity to use them. Is there any program from your side, maybe to capacitate those or assist those municipalities in assisting them in using them? And also, I just want to appreciate the initiative of having some bazaars in place on engineering. But I just want to check which requirements on selection on which students qualify for that one, and which areas you have targeted for those beneficiaries.
Thank you, Chair. First, I'd like to understand on page 4, the targets to be met by 2014. Are these targets include, I'm talking about the infrastructure, sewer, sanitation, and so forth. Does this include the informal settlements? Or is this only the formal areas that where you're going to address this informal structure? I mean, rather these backlogs. I just want to also understand what is going to be injected into the energy of the departments to make sure that they achieve this. All of the years for the past 10 years, this 2014 target has been shifting goals. Now, is this a realistic projection that you're going to achieve this by 2014? And then, on the rural infrastructure, again on page 2, I mean, we see a lot of migration, and I think presentations have been made to this committee about the growing urbanization in our country. And some of the oversight visits to human settlement in some areas in KZN, we found houses empty, built in rural areas, completely empty, unoccupied, growing grass inside. Money has been spent by government in this.
Because the beneficiaries joined you in Gauteng.
The point is, we talk about upgrading infrastructure in rural areas and building up infrastructure. Is this not a waste of state resources? I know this sounds like it might be a political statement, but the reality is that we have found, and we saw this last year in the Eastern Cape, I've seen it last week in KZN, where houses are built in the wilderness. It was assumed there would be factories developed in these areas, and once the factory closes, 200, 300, 400 houses are left vacant. No development happening. Nobody stays on those houses.
Now they are looking for people in the villages to come and occupy the house. Why would a person from a vulnerable in a village with a bigger plot come and stay in an RVP house? But let me leave that. So I really just want to understand the strategy there. And the last one is on this special purpose vehicles. Now, special purpose vehicles have got a very good purpose in theory. When it comes to practice, they don't always do what is meant for them. Now, depending on what, how you structure them, how you resolve them, what I would like to understand here is that this is supposed to now play an integrating role, as I presume, interdepartmentally, and both vertically and horizontally. Is that, or is this, because there has been this debate that money sits in one department, but the actual function lies in another department. Is the idea that the budget will now go to this special purpose vehicle to coordinate some of the transversal functions that are cut across departments, as I say, both vertically and horizontally? Thank you.
First of all, thanks, Mr. Hansby, for an energetic presentation. You've given us a lot to think about, and all of my colleagues have really asked some very good questions. I'm going to confine myself to one conceptual problem, which comes up near the end when you talk about the way forward. Care programs and projects to use bulk infrastructure development for employment creation at a local level. Now, while that may be a nice to have, one of my beliefs is that government tries to do too much and loses focus. And I would hate to see this happen again. I think that it's incontrovertible that when you start embarking on this sort of thing and looking at local employment creation rather than efficiency as a priority, efficiency suffers. And you can fall into the hands of political squabbling amongst local elites. So I would like to see that rethought and the concentration to be on delivery and efficiency and getting as much delivery as possible for our buck, rather than trying to do things which aren't really the mandate of the department.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for the presentation, Mr. Hansby. Just a question regarding the presentation with the SPV and the funding, SPV funding as well as the expertise. I'd like to know where are these expertise going to come from? Where are they going to find it suddenly, which is at the moment we are finding a lot of shortcomings because of the lack of expertise. Where are we going to source all these expertise from?
Thank you, Jay. Page 2, the informal settlement. I would like to ask, can't we just first look into what causes this formal settlement? Because to my way of thinking, we are going to increase the investment and they will keep on coming and we won't end up. Can't we just find the cause or try to limit the informal settlement? And coming to the rural area, that's the part that I really enjoy because I'm from a rural area. And to my experience, we are always mentioned here that, like, dilapidated infrastructure in the rural area. But when it starts to work out, the rural areas are always to be the last to be attended to. So can you first start with the rural area than starting with this urban area? The other question that I'd like to ask is page 4, the bedrock targets. Water, 92 to 100% in 2014. Do we mean water or water that we normally get drums or trucks coming to a village? What do we really mean when we say by 2014 we get water? And the 69% to 100%, the next one. Does this include the bucket system that we experience in the rural areas? My last question is page 5. The engineering bursaries. What criteria are we going to use here to give this bursary? And how is it going to be disseminated to the rural, 100% rural areas? How would we know that there's an engineering bursary scheme rather than seeing the provinces will be informed? But how are we going to reach the rural areas? And are we going to check that our young women are included in this bursary? And mostly the disabled children that we have that are intelligent and not considered. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Chair, I want to really thank the department for their comprehensive presentation they've made. But if we can draw attention to page 2, slide 1, which is a written introduction there. They talk about job creation. I'm very keen in knowing as to how many jobs will actually be created in the space of park infrastructure. Where are these jobs coming in? Per province, how many jobs will they be able to create? So that we don't sit here just with the fact that there are jobs being created, but we can be able to measure the success of these jobs that have been created by the end of this financial year. Second question, I'm covered somewhat by honorable members as well on page 2. Honorable Nkengwetwa has spoken about the dilapidated bulk infrastructure in rural areas. Again, for me, the concern is how much bulk infrastructure has dilapidated. We seem to not have the statistics on this, and how much of it will be fixed in this financial year. So that also goes to talking to the real achievements, what will actually be achieved in what has been set out. The third question, Chair, is really on the backlog targets. We're talking of water, sanitation, refuse and electricity there, and we are setting targets for 2014. 60% of our people reside in rural areas where much challenges arrive with no water, no sanitation, refuse, no electricity. Is the department saying to us today, by 2014, these basic needs will be addressed and eradicated? I, for one, being a public representative, reside in such areas. I'm located in a village of Mvezo where I don't have access to clean water, where I don't have access to sanitation. To relieve ourselves with my community, we have to go to the field. Are you saying to us, by 2014, this will now be addressed? The fourth and last question, Chair, we're talking about electrifying 150,000 households on page 6. Where will these connections be done, so that we can really be able to measure the service delivery as a portfolio committee? Thank you.
Thanks, Yabulen. Mine is only one question. Maybe it will not be two. And then my question to DG or whatever in the garden. Where do we get these figures? Page 5. Total National Assessment and Services, the same progress as the 31st December 2010. Where do we get the percentage. The 90%, 70%, 82%, 69%. Have you ever been, as Nathan said, the department, go down to local and find out what's happened down there? I'm covered by the flood, from my village, there are roads we waste the money that are yours, not the provincial one, not the national one. So it's bad, man. Very bad. If the department did go down and find out exactly what's going on down there, maybe the figures we are giving us, maybe we won't be the same. To have a tool which we are using to find exactly what's going on there. So maybe we will rely on the design. You manage to give us and then they're ready, but practically, have you ever go down? And then find exactly what's going on down there. Thanks so much.
I just asked maybe to add on what Mayor Chetelo on Bazaars and myself pointed out, maybe to come up with a suggestion on maybe assisting the department in identifying maybe those beneficiaries and those Bazaars schemes. We, as public representatives, I think we have some constituencies in almost 9 of the provinces that we are deployed to. If we can maybe get the information and maybe the forms so that we can help the department maybe in identifying some of the people who really need to be geographical spread to all the rural and needy provinces in the constituencies that we are deployed in. Thank you.
Wendy. Honorable Nelson.
Thank you, Chief. My apologies too for coming in late this morning. Chief, it's a 9-9.
Talk to the President and the Speaker about that.
Chief, mine is on Barclays duplication. You know, we've seen some very disturbing things when we were asked an oversight. And mine is going to go to the department to ask what. So, for instance, Eskom that is delivering electricity. I take the issue of the news, where informal settlement, where you have massive illegal electrical connections. What is the department's take on that? And how is the department dealing with it? We know that obviously the Department of Mineral Energy has also been involved with Eskom and so on. But how is the department? We have people that are being electrocuted, municipalities that throw their hands up in the air and say they can't do anything about it. It's an Eskom issue, but it's people that are suffering, I think. So I'm interested to hear how the department is dealing with issues like that. On the issue of bursaries, is the department considering experiential learning for students as well? Students that are coming out of universities of technology that are struggling to find companies to do the 1-year experiential learning with. Is the department going to consider those students as well? Thank you.
Very much. Just before we get responses from the department, it's very clear to me that we need a joint meeting of COCTA, Human Settlement, Water and Environment. The what is it called? What BNG stand for? BNG.
Breaking new ground.
Breaking new ground. Yeah. Sorry. Acronyms, yes. They are really maddening. Absolutely, yeah. Because I think a lot of the issues that we are talking about cut across these three areas of responsibility for oversight. And the fact that we also share responsibility across these three. Very clear that if we received a considered evidence of work
between these three departments at least. I'm just citing those as three that are apparent to me immediately from what we've been talking about here. And having worked in both areas of human settlement and local government as well as water-related issues, that it's very clear that from an oversight responsibility, I think we should request Shireen. We'll talk to the leadership of those committees as well, that we have a joint session, basically to integrate the kind of information that we are dealing with about what's happening. For example, when it comes to water, I have sat through a number of discussions, but I haven't had a systematic indication of a recognition that some places are being hit by drought in a significant way, that the issue of water harvesting is not only significant for that, but also because we are South Africa itself is a water scarce country, and there has been legitimate concerns about what's going to happen 15, 20 years to come, and that the preventative steps that we need to take are not emerging as a key issue that we are dealing with in a systematic way across the three areas. So my sense is that at the oversight committee level, we need to do that. Come together to talk about those issues, but the department itself, COPTA, must itself, with the officials from those three departments, work the mechanics of how what they are doing they can present to us, so that we have a sense of seeing for real what that integration means. For example, the decision for human settlement to accredit some metros, that's a very key decision. It's a very important thing. I'm very excited about it because it does something that we agreed upon many years ago. When we were on the same side with the Honorable Porter at the National Housing Forum, that was our vision, that the municipalities would do that sort of thing, okay, in the built environment, that they would act in an integrated manner, would have responsibility among others for that. And we chose a very, situational approach that said, credit when they have capacity. But I think we should have taken a more stronger line, because then that thing would have happened a long time ago. It didn't, so it's only happening now. And in a sense, the ability to coordinate is the municipal responsibility. The IDP is an expression of that perspective, that at a local level, inside those municipal boundaries, nothing should happen there if it doesn't speak effectively to that integration project. So this is why that decision around human settlement and the Department of Transport's own legislative amendments when Jeremy Cronin was still the chair of the Portfolio Committee. It's a great one. It speaks to giving responsibility to municipalities to integrate better the infrastructure, which includes human settlements and transport. Housing are key components of that. So this is why I think that approach will be a useful one, and we would like to work together to do that. I just wanted to say also that I think when we met with the Cities Network members, you will remember that we raised this question about why in the eight issues they were identifying as key priorities for their work coming there. We raised, why is water not featuring as a key priority? Water on its own, not linked to infrastructure. Water as an issue. Okay. Honorable Stole Mabanga did give some response of sorts. I must not qualify it, but I think we need to take that issue up. It's an important one. We need to act on it in a big way. And I think members have been very polite around that question. Johan, from Salga, our permanent visitor, has a question.
Thank you, Chief. The comments that were made around integration was also something that that I would have raised, because it is exactly at the municipal level when a settlement is planned, that whether it's water grounds, whether it's from infrastructure, whether it's from electricity, or whether it's from elsewhere, or from big, all of those grants goes towards a settlement and the planning of it. So that if one would have a special purpose vehicle, surely that special purpose vehicle should be applicable to all of the grants. But the point was made by the chair. The only issue that's not clear, and that I think may be interesting, is the legal basis for the SPV within the constitutional framework of local government. We have seen a REP that had a forfeit basis in terms of the constitutional framework. It's not clear from the presentation exactly how this will fit into this particular framework, whether it will be a municipal entity, how it will be procured via the MFMA and through Section 78 processes, etc.
Thank you very much. Okay, let's give the department a chance to respond.
Thank you, Chair. Now, I thought I must start because, you know, officials, my colleagues, they like to delegate upwards, so let me rather delegate downwards afterwards when I can't answer things. Let the head start to answer. So thank you, members, for the comments and questions. I'm quite confident we can cover all of the comments, and hopefully it will make sense what we are reporting on. I think that the first important comment to make that covers virtually everyone's questions in one way or another is for the committee to really appreciate and understand that our department has got a coordinating mandate and responsibility. Now, the importance of that statement is that it means that we are not, in all instances, directly responsible for implementing a lot of these things that we're talking about. It does mean that we need to take a very hands-on, a very activistic management approach to our coordinating responsibility. So I'm starting off by saying we are not making excuses up front. We are saying that yes, legally, we are not responsible for delivering many of these things, but we know that we've got an active management oversight responsibility, and hopefully that will come through when we begin to give responses. Now let me come to a couple of thematic or cross-cutting questions that were asked. The one question that was asked, I'll start with the chair, around what are the structures in place that we have to try and coordinate all of this work. The most important structure that we have in place is what we call the Implementation Forum for Outcome 9. Outcome 9, and this applies to all outcomes have been mandated to set up structures involving all of the national departments and provinces that are involved in the delivery of that particular outcome. So when it comes to service delivery here, all the MECs responsible for local government and COCTA meet on a quarterly basis together with the relevant national ministers, water affairs, we invite human settlements, and so on. So at the highest level, that is the structure going forward that we've agreed in government must be the central point of accountability and coordination and oversight for all of this work. Now, let me be a little bit more specific. Outcome 9 covers a lot of things. Services, basic services, is one of the things that Outcome 9 covers. What we agreed to do last year we had a joint MINMEX with the Department of Human Settlements, precisely members, because we realized that we need a special focus on basic services and infrastructure delivery. So we agreed, the two departments, that we're going to be having these joint MINMECs, and more importantly, at the technical level, the Director General of Human Settlements and myself need to convene all the other national departments that have got a role to play when it comes to all of these things. So we had a joint MINMEC, we had a meeting that we convened in December, the DG of Human Settlements and myself, where we agreed that we need to put in place, we need to urgently put in place a joint program of action that covers all of these matters that my colleague has reported on. So we have a meeting planned in the next 2-4 weeks where we are going to finalize on that joint program of action that will cover all of these things. So I'm saying this to make the point that we are trying to streamline structures. We are realizing that, that for us the most important department that we need to work with is Human Settlements, precisely because they are dealing with integrated approach to development and Human Settlements, and they are also a key partner to ensure that we need to pull in water, electricity, refuse removal, the land use matters, etc. So I think that is one important response that, that we must share with the committee. The second point around apartheid spatial geography, just two quick points on that. I'm glad, Chairperson, that you raised the issue of accreditation because I was going to raise that in response to this question. It was last week, Friday, that the Minister of Human Settlements basically conferred accreditation to 8 municipalities in this country, to the six metros and to 2 districts. The 2 districts are from the Northern Cape. Now, when I was at that meeting and I represented our ministry and department, the single most important point that the Minister of Human Settlements made, and we are fully in support of that, he was saying that we expect our urban-based municipalities and our secondary cities now with their accreditation to drive very hard the issue of creating integrated settlements that begins to challenge the apartheid settlement patterns. And he was saying that now with much more direct responsibility given to them, we obviously going to continue to support them, but his argument was that with them being given level 2 accreditation, maybe I should also just say this, the accreditation, there are 3 levels of accreditation, and these 8 municipalities have been given what we call level 2 accreditation. So it's not the full. There's one component which is outstanding, and I think that component refers to giving them full financial responsibility. So I think that is the one component that has not been transferred yet, but I think we can, if it's the committee, obviously, we can come back with the details around that. But the first point I'm making is that really we think that there is a greater scope now to begin to challenge and reverse the path to spatial geography with this accreditation. The second important point I want to make here is that we are working very closely with the National Planning Commission and with the Department of Rural Development and Human Settlements on the Land Use Management Bill. This process is obviously still in the executive, and it is at a very advanced stage where we hope to go to Cabinet quite soon, and obviously again to Cabinet we intend to come here. We have a lot of expectation that particular legislation will also assist us. Chairperson, as far as I know, we are not working with the HSRC, so clearly that is something that we need to look at and we can follow up on. We agree completely on the issue that says that there are challenges around the poor management of contracts and the quality of infrastructure. We just need to look at the recent disasters and look at the damages to housing, the damages to our roads, to our bridges, the damages to our schools. And it was also just last week, and I'm now speaking on matters that maybe I shouldn't really be in detail on, but last week we had a meeting of the Interministerial Committee on Disaster Management. And in this meeting, we were given statistics. We were sharing with our political principals, we were sharing statistics on the damages caused by the disasters. And the point I want to make, I'm linking it to the question, it is very clear that the majority of damages are actually caused, yes, they've been caused by the disasters, but they've actually been caused because of poor quality workmanship of our schools, of our roads, of our bridges, and of our houses. Because in some provinces, this was much more obvious than in other provinces. And I think there's a recognition that going forward, clearly we need to at least stick to basic minimum building standards and so on. Now, clearly part of our interventions going forward, the SPV is going to be an important one. The work around the Municipal Infrastructure Grant continues to be an important area of support, whereby we specifically target those municipalities that are underspending and require support. Let me come to the SPV and deal with a number of questions around the SPV. Who supports the SPV? When the SPV was first mooted, we have taken this proposal to all the structures that we are directly responsible for. We have taken it to our MINMEC meeting. We've consulted with MECs. SALGA is a full part of that. We have taken it to all the relevant national departments that we work with, bilaterally and also in multilateral meetings. And I can say to this committee that the most important stakeholder that we had to work with very closely on this matter was National Treasury. And National Treasury was the last party that really has been asking very important and very difficult questions around the SPV. In November, December last year, we managed to reach complete consensus with National Treasury on the SPV. And that, of course, I'm saying that we consult the other sector departments. Now, let me say one of the other things about the SPV. The SPV, and let me jump right to the end with my colleague from SALGA, and I suppose he has not been briefed by his colleagues who have been part of these processes. But the SPV, as Mr. Hansby has been saying, the legal status, the proposal right now is that the legal status of this SPV will be that of a government component. Okay, so what that means, it means it will be an entity within the portfolio of the ministry, but it will have a special status whereby it will report directly to the minister, but it will also have certain rights and certain responsibilities where it can contract directly with a range of parties. So it will also be given certain responsibilities in terms of the PFMA. So in other words, the head of the government component will have certain responsibilities that are similar to that of a director general, where it becomes the accounting officer to do certain things. The other important point to make about the SPV is that, and this is a point that we spent long negotiating with National Treasury, the special purpose vehicle is going to be an entity that is not going to be imposed on municipalities. So it is not a structure that is going to be enforced on municipalities or anyone in this country. We have established the SPV as an enabling structure that will voluntarily enter into agreements with municipalities who so deem to solicit the support from the SPV. So that is going to be the legal contracting nature of the work of the SP. Voluntarily, it will enter into relationships with different municipalities. I must be frank with the committee to say that there is one area that we are still exploring and we're trying to get cabinet to give us final guidance on this point. It still deals with the legal status. We are wanting to put a provision in the work of the SPV that says where we are giving monies via MIG, the MIG to municipalities, and some municipalities are spending poorly. We want to build in a provision that says after we have supported them to improve their spending and after a particular point in time, we would want to make it mandatory for those municipalities after we've given them successive support and there's no improvement. At that point, we would like to explore whether it shouldn't be mandatory for those municipalities to get the support from the SB. From the SPV. So that is one area that we're still exploring. Because we are of the view that many municipalities are in trouble and they do not admit that they're in trouble. They come to us when it is too late, when the financial year is closed and our communities have suffered. So we are exploring that one last provision that says after we have gone through this voluntary route of negotiation and we think that they have still not been able to do what they meant to do, at that point we are exploring whether we can't get the SPV to kick in. So that is maybe just the one last difficult area. Let me deal with resources, because I think the Honourable Member asked that question. Two comments around the resources. One, we have been allocated, and I'm dealing with another question as well, we have been allocated by National Treasury an amount of 196 million in our budget for the next year, 2011-12. So on the 1st of April, in less than a month's time, we will have on our books 196 million to support us in operationalizing the SPV. And that will clearly use, the majority of that money will be used to mobilize resources, technical skills that we will deploy to municipalities. And that comes to my second point around resourcing. The SPV is very closely reliant on what Sehel Zamanje has been doing in the past. We have been in very close negotiations with the DBSA. In fact, just yesterday I was having a discussion over the phone with the CEO of the DBSA on the same matter. But the point I'm wanting to make is that there are a number of deployees, professionals, engineers, planners that are currently contracted by the DBSA that will move over from the DBSA to our department to come and work in the SPV. We are busy finalizing the number of people. We are busy dealing with the contractual arrangements. We are busy looking at the kinds of projects that they've been, and we are basically attending to all of that kind of paperwork. But the short answer is that there is a sizable group of professionals that will be moving over from what used to be CN Zamanje into the SPV, and we are quite close to kind of finalizing that. The last point I want to make about the SPV is that notwithstanding everything that I've said to date, we are prioritizing that this matter gets taken to cabinet in the next couple of weeks. We already have a draft cabinet memo because we do need final cabinet approval just for one or two things. But the major decisions have been taken already in terms of allocations of funding, in terms of the major area of work, but in terms of the institutional form, the government component, we believe that we really need to get just final cabinet concurrence on that. So I've tried to deal with a number of questions around the SPV and to some extent CN Zamanje. There was a question around the financial management component of CN Zamanje. Now, if members may you recall, if you didn't know, CN Zamanje had a different windows or different elements, components to it. And the one component is what we call a financial management component. We are not assuming the responsibility for that component on the 1st of April. National Treasury will continue to work closely with the DBSA when it comes to that component. So in that respect, yes, we are talking to National Treasury about that, but they have entered into a separate arrangement with National Treasury whereby they will focus on providing financial management support. But when it comes to the infrastructure component, everything else that I explained earlier applies to the infrastructure component in terms of the number of deployees, the resources, and the money that has been redirected away from the DBSA to our department. So what that also means, Chairperson, is that we are not directly in negotiations with the Note for the World Bank. We are not aware of that. In fact, I am aware of that, but we are not directly involved in any of those discussions. Those discussions are directly being pursued by National Treasury. Coming to the issue of dilapidated bulk infrastructure, there are one or two questions on that. Yes, we have undertaken an audit, I think about a year or two ago. And apologies, Honourable Member, of course, we haven't shared some of those statistics, but we actually do have statistics around water treatment plants, around sewage plants, around the kind of capability of those plants. But I think we had discussions with Water Affairs last year on this matter, and they have decided that they would like to do an independent verification of that study. And that is why we haven't released it publicly yet, or we haven't spoken too much about that. So one of the things we've agreed with Water Affairs is that we actually need to have a joint MINMEC at the end of this month. So at the end of this month, we are having a joint MINMEC with Water Affairs, and this will be one of the very important things we're going to be discussing, is where we're going to be getting a preliminary report on their audit that they are doing to verify some of the work that we've done. You see, one statistic that just comes to the top of my head, I know that in the province of Gauteng, I know there was a statistic that was saying that a lot of the bulk infrastructure around water treatment plants, sewage plants, virtually all of the infrastructure in Gauteng is already in excess of the current lifespan. In other words, they are handling volumes of water and water that needs to be treated and water that goes to the sewage plant that exceeds the capability of those plots. So I'm just saying as one example in Gauteng, we already know that there's a major problem in terms of the maintenance and the standards of that infrastructure. Coming to the next question around who is monitoring all of this work around the infrastructure that we're talking about. In the first instance, it is sectors. Sectors have been given the responsibility of continuing to monitor in the area of water, in the area of refuse removal, sanitation, and energy. But at the same time, honourable members, we work directly with provinces and municipalities. We have a monitoring and evaluation system that we are busy continuing to fine-tune, but once a quarter, in terms of this outcomes-based approach to our work now, once a quarter, we get statistics on all of these areas that we are talking about. So the statistics that we report here about 93% and so on, that is statistics we actually get from two different sources. We ask the sectors to give us that. Water affairs gives it to us. Electricity gives it to us. But we also ask the municipalities to give that information to their provinces, and the provinces then aggregate that information and give it to us. So we are fairly confident that the information we have is as accurate as possible up until, I think, September last year. And in fact, just last week, honorable members, we went to Cabinet and we were trying to give the latest statistics up to December on some of these things. But again, one of the things that we are doing, we are continuing to verify some of the things, because Cabinet also asked one or two difficult questions. Again, let me just select something here, and I hope I'm not opening up a hornet nest here. A certain political party released their manifesto, and if you look at the statistics they talk about in that manifesto and the statistics of government, slightly different. So one of the things precisely that we are busy checking right now is exactly that 93% that we spoke about, the 82% and so on. So those are some of the things that we are busy fine-tuning. But in terms of monitoring, it is us who monitors, and it is the sectors that monitors, but ultimately it comes to us as the coordinating department. What are we doing about capacity building? There was a question around capacity building. In the past, we have used the MIG program to send our officials to especially those municipalities that are struggling with the expenditure. So my colleagues can explain to you that we look at the reports, we look at the municipalities, the expenditure, and we literally go and physically visit those municipalities and provide them with support. So that is an ongoing program that we have. In addition to that, we have to work very closely with CN Samanji and the DPSA through the deployees. The program of the deployees is directly aimed at capacity building and ensuring that our municipalities on the ground have the necessary capability. I can also say to the committee, without getting into details, there are a number of new proposals that we're considering. As I'm sitting right now, I'm considering a proposal from one of the biggest construction companies in this country and one of the biggest professional engineering companies in this country, whereby they have come together to make a proposal of going to one of the townships in this country and rolling out a comprehensive integrated infrastructure support program. It's a very exciting program, and I'm just saying that is one example of a range of proposals that we're looking at going forward. The question around targets, Honorable Boeta, this question is a very important question and sometimes becomes a difficult question. But from where we are sitting, the 2014 targets cover the entire country. We're not excluding anyone in any part of the country, urban or rural, or any type of settlement. So these figures are national figures that we are giving around 100%. Now, what we are doing, because as I'm saying, this question comes up in quite a few meetings that we sit in. The one question that we have been asked is exactly the question that came also from the course here. What are we doing in rural areas? Because that is where the real challenge is going to be. And one of the proposals that we're busy considering is we're busy taking up a proposal from the Department of Science and Technology, where they have indicated to us that they, with working with their scientific community and working with colleagues that are looking at innovative alternative models to service delivery, The DG of Science and Technology has said that we need to have urgent discussions with them in terms of seeing how we can mainstream and roll out some of these alternative methodologies that they propose, specifically aimed at kind of rural areas. So my answer to the committee is that yes, we remain committed to this. We think that Siyenza Manje is going to be able to give us a footprint that must extend to rural areas. We are really going to insist on this. And this is one of the reasons why we felt that Siyenza Manje must come to us, because we felt that it needs this stronger rural focus that we can drive. But I'm also saying to the committee that we are in discussions with the Department of Science and Technology. This also links to the question around urbanization and the issue around resources and what this means for building houses within rural areas. Now, let me just make one point here. Again, this is an issue that we've not thought about. In fact, this matter was discussed last year at one of the highest structures in government, known as the President's Coordinating Council, and it was literally discussed almost in exactly the same way as the way in which the member raised the question. The decision of the PCC that was taken was that the Department of Human Settlements and our department, we need to go and prepare proposals on how we can deal with this challenge of rural housing, but more importantly, of people coming from rural areas, coming to urban areas, but we know that they're only coming there to do work, and they have no intention of setting up an established home and house in an urban area, because they regard their rural areas as base. So the one proposal that we're busy working on with Human Settlements was to look at a range of different housing options, e.g. public rental stock. In fact, there was a long proposal being made in that meeting around how we need to look at driving more aggressively this option of public rental stock in urban areas, specifically aimed at citizens from our country, from rural areas that are coming to urban areas just to look for work, but they're wanting to go back. So that is one part of the response. I'm saying that we've been mandated to look at that. Now, this is a complex area, because what I'm not answering is the question of housing in rural areas. And I know that the Department of Rural Development and the Department of Human Settlements, they are busy still looking at this issue of the best housing approach to rural areas. And Honourable Chairperson, I think this is something that I think we can come back to the committee on. And I would even propose that we get that particular department to come join us on that matter. Coming to the next question on employment creation. Chairperson, I'm trying to be thorough. You can ask me to speed up or summarize. On the issue of employment creation, let me just be frank with the committee and say, as we sit in right here, right now, we do not have concrete targets linked to the work that we have just presented. But I can also say to the committee very confidently that this is something that we are working on. In fact, at the last cabinet, Lahotla, every single department was mandated to go and work on detailed job creation targets. And that includes provinces and it includes municipalities. So as we are sitting here, one of the tasks that I've given my new DDG here is precisely to come back to me and say, in our MIG program, in the work of different municipalities around capital work, around maintenance programs, what are the projections that we can put on the table for 2014, even going up to kind of 2020? So I'm saying to the committee that is something that we are still looking at, and we will be very keen to come to the committee and to share that. I can also say that we have preliminary projections, but I'm certainly not confident at this stage to begin to share those projections. But certainly through the MIG program in the next financial year is about 10 billion rand. Now, surely with 10 billion rand worth of infrastructure, you must be able to say how much job opportunities you think you can generate based on 10 billion rand just for the next financial year. So that is some of the work that we're currently working on. And again, Chairperson, we can come back on that. I've dealt with some of the issues around informal settlement and what we're dealing with there. I've dealt with the issue of of some of the targets. Let me just say also, maybe I wasn't too clear on this one, when we talk about 100% targets, water, sanitation, and so on, we are still talking about the basic services level of access. So in other words, if I have to take the example of water, when we talk about 100% access, we're not talking about 100% access whereby every single household will have a tap on the stand. We are not talking about that. We are talking about potable water, and we are still talking about the standards of, I think, in about 100 meters walking distance. And the same would apply to sanitation, whereby we are not talking about everyone having access to the individual toilet which is waterborne. But we're certainly not talking about the bucket system. We are way beyond the bucket system. So I can assure honorable members that is not part of the kind of vision that we have. On the issue of birth fees, maybe my colleagues want to add here, but I can say that we have advertised, I'm not sure if we have advertised this, but the intention was to advertise this nationally within newspapers. And honorable chairperson, absolutely, we would really say to the committee that if you have proposals you want to forward to us around possible beneficiaries, I'm sure we can entertain those. So I think those can be directed directly to my office on that. I've dealt with job creation targets, I've dealt with bulk infrastructure, I've dealt with some of the issues around rural areas. Around electricity, again, this is something that we are working with on electricity, and in fact, what we have said to each of the sectors, the water, electricity, we have asked each of these sectors to prepare what we call a master sector plan, whereby they must indicate to us how they intend to ensure that we reach these targets that we are talking about. So that is something that we continue to work with the sectors on. On the issue, just to come back to the issue of bursaries, I think this is a proposal that we will take, honorable member, this thing about experiential learning, but I think already that is part of our thinking, whereby, when somebody comes into the bursary program, they come from a particular area, they go and study, and the way in which we crafted this bursary program is that we like those students to go back to the areas, to the municipalities that they come from, and to do some work there. If they got the bursary for 4 years, we'd like them to go back for 4 years. So that is part of. But I think, again, we can come back with some of the kind of details around that. Let me just conclude, Chairperson, by commenting on the very important suggestion around a joint meeting with other portfolios. There may be one or two that we also may want to put in, but I know that we also need to look at the manageability. But the Department of Energy will be important around the issue of electricity rollout. The Department of Rural Development is also important, Chairperson. Why they're important is because they are also doing their own work around rolling out basic services, which cuts across a lot, and they are obviously targeting a lot of the kind of poverty nodes in the country. So I think it would be very interesting if we invited them. And then, of course, the other department that we may want to consider is also Public Works, for exactly the same reason. Through the Expanded Public Works Program, they are also dealing with some basic community infrastructure and some basic services. Chairperson, I've tried to cover some of the issues. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, yes, just a few. I think the DJ has been very comprehensive in his response. But just to come back to the issue of employment creation, for which I'm directly responsible for, there was a question as to who monitors employment creation. At the moment, there is a structure being set up within GAMBO. It's already set up deriving from the cluster system. It's been decided there that, as the DG indicated, every department should indicate their job creation achievements based on that, also to develop their own targets. Now, what is happening at the moment, a mechanism and methodology is being developed that will allow departments to track specifically how many jobs they create through their various programs. Now, these are not easy things. So it will take a few more weeks for the Department of Economic Development to finalize that particular tool. They are working with the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation within the Presidency to put together the tool, and there will be announcements very soon on that particular one. So that system is being developed currently. There was a question about confusing economic or job creation with infrastructure development and the provision of bulk infrastructure. What we are saying is, yes, our core mandate remains the rollout of infrastructure. But, you know, like many other countries, they've used the amount of spending on infrastructure smartly to generate job creation. If we planned appropriately, for example, during the World Cup, we would have ensured that more local jobs were created through the amount of investment in infrastructure for the World Cup. So what we are saying now is we have an opportunity, in a, you know, having learned from past experience, to actually see how we can use this effectively to, number one, both in industry, because in the Industrial Policy Action Plan 2 of the DTI, it is specifically said that we will use our infrastructure spending to develop a construction industry, but also a construction materials industry that is much more sizable and dynamic than what we have currently, because we currently source most of our, or a lot of our inputs from other countries when it comes to construction and infrastructure development. So we have an opportunity on the back of our spending to ensure that we create local jobs through the development of enterprises. It's the same as the U.S. does when they go to war. It stimulates local industry in the armament sector. No, no. War on poverty. War on poverty, Chair. I think you know, just to end on that particular point, Chair, but it's also how we use the projects at local level smartly to ensure that we rely on labor-intensive techniques of construction. I think we are still evolving in that field, and I think, you know, certain standards have to be developed to ensure that the delivery or the quality of the infrastructure is not undermined by labor-intensive techniques. And also the cost. We have to be very sensitive about the cost of the construction projects. I think with regards to the bursary, just to end off, unfortunately for this round, the bursary, the closing date was about 2 weeks ago. But I can assure members that the selection process is a thorough process, starting with the issue of students from rural areas. It has been taken into account. I think secondly, the issue of women or female students, that is also very high on the agenda, and also the issue of disabled students. Those are the target groups in general that we're looking at. But we also don't want to be exclusive, given the scale of the challenge when it comes to engineering skills within the country. It also extends to engineering technician. It is not only for those who study towards degrees and to get registered as professional engineers. I think, you know, there was one issue with regards to the SPV, which the DG hinted at, but the question came from Salga, I think, was with regards to the transversal role of the SPV. For the moment, as a start, the SPV is a departmental, or, you know, within our ministry, and it operates within the purview of our mandate. But the idea is to, as we go along, to develop it so that it can play that coordinating role and work on total solutions when it comes to the development of bulk infrastructure. Where do we get figures? We commission reports from time to time. You've seen the report on universal access to basic services, the U.S. report. The bulk infrastructure audit, which was also done by our department, we factored that into the presentation, and I neglected to mention that. But we rely on municipalities and provinces to get most of our information. Sometimes the information is not reliable, so we have to double-check. And we are building our own monitoring and evaluation capacity within the department to ensure the accuracy of the data that we give through. Thank you, Chair. Yes.
Thanks, Chair. Now to the DDG. Luckily now, the Salga is also here. You talk of creating a job. I don't know whether you are going to create jobs for individuals or you want to create jobs for the people. Because my question then is that we have outsourced now the most of the work which was done by before. Like the collection of refuse. It's no more than by municipality. Where we know that these people will get jobs now. So if they want to create jobs, they want to create jobs for the individuals. No, no, not for the people. Ruta, just respond to that for me, please.
Thank you, Chair. Just to add into what Honorable Machoba is saying on the issue of job creation, the DG says we are not legally responsible. So for me, it just poses another question. If you are not legally responsible, what have you signed with the president? What deliverables are going to be there if the service delivery agreements are not legally binding? I'm just baffled as to what is binding in this. Second question, Chair, with this issue of these bursaries, now the DDG says it's closed 2 weeks ago, and the DG was saying that they were looking to advertise nationally through newspapers. These papers are not accessible to people in rural areas. I, for one, have never seen a newspaper in Mvezo. So, how do we ensure that rural people have been informed, rural people have been accessed, and these adverts are really talking to our people at grassroots level? Thank you, Chair.
Those clarified. I'm going to suggest that DG, you do so quickly, and then we take a 5 minutes comfort break and come back so that we go on to the next item. I would just say one or two words before they do that.
No, thanks very much for that. On the issue of bursaries, I mean, I think, you know, my colleague, I think, has tried to clarify that. And, you know, sometimes I'm not on top of all of the details because I know that I dealt with the matter, and after I signed off, I didn't know it went through. So my colleague has indicated that we have advertised that. I think going forward, we probably take the view that says we need to ensure that we advertise it in the most creative way, even working with our traditional leaders, because I think that becomes a very important innovative area that probably we've not looked at. So I think we can make that commitment going forward. On the issue of jobs, Honourable Member, I'm doing my best to understand the question. From where we are sitting, our portfolio, if I just use the Municipal Infrastructure Grant as one example, these contracts are managed by municipalities on the ground when they you know, decide to build a road, when they decide to build high mast lights and so on. And I know the route that we always propose is that they must work with local organized formations on the ground. They must work through their ward committees and try and get the names of members of communities, those localized communities, to come and make themselves available to work on those projects. So I'm just trying to be practical to say that is the way in which we work with communities, and that is the way in which we try and get people to kind of work on projects on the ground. Obviously, the professionals sometimes come from the district, they come from province, and we are aware in some instances the professionals even come from outside of the province in some instances. And I know that is something that we don't completely support, but sometimes there are good reasons why some of those professionals come in. So I'm trying to answer the question that says we try and work. Our guidance to municipalities is that they must work with the communities on the ground, with the established structures, to make sure that we give job opportunities through those. The community organizations help us, and all committees help us to identify people. On the issue of being legally responsible, maybe, I mean, I'll try and be quick here and hopefully not cause more confusion. Let me say it differently. We have a Department of Water Affairs as one example. We have a Department of Energy as one example. Those departments, by law, are responsible for those sectors. They administer legislation that deals with those particular sectors. So legally, they remain the sectors and the departments that are responsible for that. Our role as a coordinating department is that we definitely, through Outcome 9, and you're definitely, I want us not to be confused, we are absolutely committed and we remain responsible. We remain responsible to ensure that all the targets are met in our outcome line. So when we talk about these 100%, 100% and so on, we remain responsible to ensure that those targets are met working together with those other departments. The only point I'm trying to make is that the sectors in terms of the formal technical legal mandate, that is what they must drive. So maybe the word legal responsible maybe is a wrong terminology, Chair. We are definitely responsible, but from a narrow perspective, the sectors continue to be directly responsible and we work very closely with them. Thank you.
Oh, that's okay. I guess what it means is that the framework for powers and functions and responsibilities remains in place and you work around those, but in a manner that demonstrates your story about working together. So that's an important one. I just wanted to make a couple of points. The first one is that the HSRC and the CSIR do a lot of thinking, research work in very critical areas that often relate to service delivery and produce interesting innovations. For example, some of the stuff they did related to solar, and the Germans used their big pockets to take that in some universities. They've also done some work that they have produced some stuff to work with potholes, and the Ugu district did that some around 2006. My sources tell me the Honorable Bengu, I think, just arrived there or just before she goes as a mayor there. But also they do a lot of work around issues of service delivery that you are responsible for sometimes. These IDPs, the planning related issues, that your work gets impacted by those things. But even besides that, they are state funded research institutions and the work they do impact on the work that we expect you guys to be drawing on them and so on. So for us, this is a very important part of the work that we should be doing, drawing on that and bringing to bear on the work we do. You see, you speak about the impact of DTI, of government as a whole, and its requirement for emphasizing manufacturing base. We've got rich potential for using hemp as a material in the building industry and construction, and you've just signed relations with France. They've been using it for years, so you might want to talk to them about it, so that the quality of infrastructure that we build, the materials that are used there, there's a conservativeness in the use of materials in the departments and the professionals in the departments that prevent that from being unleashed to produce good quality infrastructure using good environmentally sound materials that have been used elsewhere in the world with unquestionable ability. So let's use available resources. There are opportunities for doing that. So let's expand our working together to include our own research institutions. I'm just making that point. And so it would be useful if we can get that and work with it. Members, this infrastructure presentation and our discussion of it has raised a number of issues that require us to follow up, including the meetings that I've spoken about. But it also means that we must try and get, statistics, damn statistics. We will quarrel and fight about those continually. and their sources and so on. But I think the key issue is that we will obviously also incorporate them in the quality and kind of oversight that we are doing to look at what is emerging by way of this. So it will mean that we must talk to people who also do this work. Let's follow it up, and this has been a very useful one. I think we'll come back to the department, but also as a committee interacting with others, we take this forward. Let's take our comfort break, as I said, and then let's come back in the next 7 minutes.
I don't have his number. Didn't we respond to him? We responded to him long time ago. But maybe there's a remnant.
No, yes, I didn't get it. Probably not a remnant.
Oh.
That's me. I said somebody was saying he was George. I actually said anything to George. I think George spoke on it.
I'll give him a shot.
Thank you. I'm not sure if you're going to be able to do that.